It's hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? Follow up.
So over the weekend, about 100 protesters, a little less than that, got together on Saturday morning, for Shama Sawant's anti-Amazon protest. It was all in support of the head tax vote that's going to take place later today.
We are ready to fight. Housing is a human right. We are ready to fight. Housing is a human right.
The thing is, so housing is not a human right, not in the way that they're talking about it. They believe that internet access is a human right. All these things are apparently human right only because they personally want them. They don't want to have to work for anything. Right? They don't want to have to pay for anything. Everything is just inherently a human right. And they got into some weird moments because before Shama Sawant, Councilmember Sawant, gave her speech, they had a whole bunch of speakers there. This one dude is... tell me if you understand what he's saying here, what he means by the term take it by force.
So today we stand up to the capitalists and demand a swift redistribution of their wealth to alleviate those most suffering. And if we don't happen to win a legislative victory with this EHT, we will take it by force. Because as we know, our power is in each other, the workers. We do not need the bosses, you guys. The bosses need us.
Take what by force? What are you taking by force? And what does that actually mean? So let's say you lose the head tax, which they're not. We'll preview it later today. They're going to initially win out the vote that happens today in the Seattle City Council. Then Mayor of Seattle, Jenny Durkin's going to veto it. And then they'll try to negotiate it. But what are you taking by force? Did you understand what he was trying to take by force? Is he going after Amazon? Is he going after the mayor's office? What are you taking by force? And by the way, I thought you guys were like nonviolent. Or are we going back to being violent? I'm just kind of curious. Like, I legitimately don't know what he's talking about when he says, we're going to take it by force. No, you're not. You're going to take nothing by force. Look at you. None of you are able to go to any sort of war. You're anti-war, I was told. But you, good luck. Now, Shama Sawant was there, of course. I got the exclusive interview with her pre-speech. She was sitting there. And I just walked up to her. I'm like, hey, you want to talk? And she gave me this look of, I remember who you are. Let's do it. Because she's been to the studio a few times. And weirdly enough, I have a good relationship with Shama Sawant, and I will give her this kind of credit. While I maintain I'm incredibly fair-minded with her, because I'll take her side in some cases. I'll say she's right to be upset with how she's being treated, but I'll also call her out when I think she's going too far. She always at least makes time when I ask for time with her. And so I'll give her kudos to that, because the same can't be said for these other cowards that she works with, like Mike O'Brien and Teresa Mosqueda, these other council members who just run from anyone who calls themselves a conservative or might even ask a tough question. And so I spoke to her and I told her, look, you're going to win the vote on Monday today, but Jenny Durkin, the mayor, is going to veto it. So what's next for you?
First of all, I would make a note of how far the movement for housing justice has come, that this is Saturday, the day after the majority of the committee yesterday voted for a $75 million tax on big business with no loopholes, no sunset clause. So our message today is to the city council to stand strong, the majority to stand strong on that same idea and to pass through full council $75 million, no loopholes, no sunset clause. And if Mayor Durkin is threatening to veto, then let's call her bluff. You know, she needs to stand up to the light of day. And if she's going to veto it, let her openly veto it and we'll keep building the movement.
Okay, fair enough. But then she goes on to make a point that is just statistically inaccurate.
Whether you are on the right or on the left, like me, you are probably facing the affordable housing crisis. Just by statistics, I think most of your readers are also struggling to pay their rent. So I would urge them to look at...
Just real quick, are most of you struggling to pay your rent? Because that's what they want you to believe. There is this narrative that is being pushed by Shama Sawant and others in her camp that this city and this region is just filled with people who can't afford to pay their rent. That everyone is just one missed paycheck away from becoming homeless. When that is demonstrably not the case. The reason why the prices of apartments are so high is because there is a market for people to pay high prices for those apartments. When you have in the Seattle area, depending on which study you're looking at, because I've seen two that say somewhat different things, the median income is between $60,000 and $80,000. That does not mean that you're one missed paycheck away from being homeless. It does not mean that the majority of people who are reading me at KTTH.com or listening to me right here on KTTH are this close to being put out on the streets. That's just demonstrably untrue. Now, there is a difference in whether or not we want to pay as much as we end up paying for those of us who live in the Seattle area. I don't want to pay as much as I pay in my rent. I can afford it. I just don't want to pay. It's just really, really expensive. And so let's not conflate the two things here. That's exactly what they do. That's how they win the emotional argument so often with Seattleites, is they will conflate two completely different issues, pretend that they're exactly the same, and then maybe get you a little bit sympathetic to their cause, at least sympathetic enough that you're not going to take to the streets and fight back a little bit. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
Hillary Clinton thinks America is sexist, and we kind of know that already about her beliefs about this country, which actually weirdly played into why she's not the president. And she says a big reason why she's not, in fact, the president is Americans are uneasy with women in positions of power, which, of course, from the context of her winning the popular vote but losing the Electoral College, that kind of makes the point that we're not uneasy with women in positions of power. She got the majority of the popular vote. Okay, whatever. She's talking in Australia. She's pushing her book and she's trying to stay relevant even though no one cares anymore what she has to say. And she goes on by, or she starts off by going after Trump and the way he treated women.
If you remember, our current president, when he was running for the Republican nomination, insulted women's looks repeatedly, including the one woman on the stage who was vying for the Republican nomination. He didn't attack her successful business background or her views on issues. He attacked her face, and he attacked the women's faces of commentators and interviewers who were asking him things.
How many times in the last year and a half or so did Democrats go after the looks of Sarah Huckabee Sanders? How many people went after the looks of Donald Trump? Small hands, orange face, weird hair. I mean, are you then conceding that the Democrats are also sexist and also preoccupied with the looks of folks? Do you want to be treated fairly, or do you just want to go after one side?
Now, why did he do that, other than the fact that he is what he is? But why did he do that? Because it was a way of undermining the women he was insulting. And there is a big audience for that, I regret to tell you, that there is still a very large proportion of the population that is uneasy with women in positions of leadership. And so the easiest way to kind of avoid having to look at someone on her merits is to dismiss her on her looks.
Okay. I mean, at this point, I'm kind of in the position where I don't know exactly what to say to her constant excuses. But I guess I'll just reiterate the point that we've made over and over and over again, including, by the way, Democrats have made this point. It's not that the American public didn't want a woman leader. They didn't want you to be that woman leader. Because no one trusts you. Because you have a shady past, because you are focused solely on you and not the American people, which is what is evidenced by you constantly making all of these speeches and doing all of these interviews and writing a book that basically dismisses why you actually lost. You're just making it about you. You're the victim. You're perpetually a victim. And maybe America doesn't want that. Maybe nobody wants that. Were the Democrats all a bunch of sexists when you ran against Obama and lost during the primary? Was that the reason why you lost? This is someone who keeps failing upwards and doesn't take the hint that no one wants you in positions of power. The only times that they can get them is if she goes to elite progressive states like in New York. But if you think that she's going to be popular outside of these little progressive havens, you're out of your mind. We are fine with women in power. We just don't like you. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Thank you for telling all your friends about the show. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Or, of course, you can head over to our Twitter feed, twitter.com/JasonRants. Instagram, you can also look up Jason Rants. A whole bunch of ways to get the full immersive experience. Something happening right now is breaking-ish. There's a ceremony going on in Jerusalem. It is all about formally recognizing the city as the capital of Israel. You know that back in December, so just a few months ago, President Trump had made the announcement that he would be moving the United States embassy to Jerusalem in the coming years. It's going to take some time for them to fully implement this, but this morning there's a ceremony taking place that is to celebrate the U.S. consular facility that's being repurposed for an embassy as the new embassy building will be constructed. That's going to take at least a couple years or so. Yesterday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu gave a speech where he called this decision historic.
This is a momentous time. President Trump is making history.
He is making history. And as a result of that, he is thankful for all the president has done.
We are deeply grateful, and our people will be eternally grateful for his bold decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and to move the embassy there tomorrow.
So this just gets the ball rolling. Now, whether or not it's going to be permanent, I do not know. Obviously, Netanyahu believes that it will be, but certainly another president can come in and say, no, we're going to move it back. I don't know how likely that is, but it's possible.
Jerusalem has been the capital of the Jewish people for the past 3,000 years.
And by the way, that is a historical fact. That is a historical fact. I know some people want to pretend that that's not the case. The people who generally take that position are those that are sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinian people, the side that generally lobs, you know, rockets over at Israel and tries to wipe them from the face of the earth. Those are the people who are standing on the side against what Netanyahu is now saying.
It's been the capital of our state for the past 70 years. It will remain our capital for all time.
I hope so. Certainly hope so, despite the fact that there are lots of voices out there that would like to see that not be a reality. I know that we want to pretend, because Donald Trump was behind this, that this move is somehow controversial in this country. It is not. It is not. Congress, back in 1995, supported this move. And yet since then, we've had president after president after president who's been unable or unwilling to get this done. President Trump made it very clear when he was running for office that he would do this, and this is yet another promise that he's followed up on. And so maybe you don't like that he followed up on this particular promise, but can we at least give kudos for doing something that most politicians generally just say they'll do, that Congress has been saying they wanted to do since 1995, but have chosen not to? And at the same time, what's happening now, because this ceremony is happening in Jerusalem as we speak. The president is expected to deliver a video address at this ceremony any moment now. But what's also happening is that there are lots of protests in the region. Palestinian protests. In fact, at least 37 were killed this morning in clashes at the border. Now, lots of these people were armed. One of these people was caught trying to plant a bomb near the Gaza border fence, according to Israeli's military. We've got about 35,000 protesters there. Does that sound like a reasonable position for these protesters to take? I mean, think about that for a moment, because we're dealing with crazy. They're armed, some of them carrying a bomb. They're protesting that the United States finally made good on a promise from 1995. The people who are upset, generally speaking, are the ones who are sympathetic to anti-Semitic causes and anti-Semitic positions. So I'm proud that the president got involved here. As a Jew, I'm proud that he got involved here. As an American who understands the importance of our ally in a region that is generally seeing lots of chaos and lots of anti-democratic principles and values being espoused, as an American who supports Israel, I'm proud of this president for what he's doing. This is part one, or I suppose part two. Part one is the announcement. Part two of an ongoing journey to finally moving the embassy where it should be. It's the Jason Rants Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. If you want to send me a text, do so. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. The KTTH hotline brought to you by our friends over at None Better Tax Resolution. Shout out to them because they're the ones who have allowed us to communicate with you in a way that is a first in KTTH's history. So 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. I told you the story last week where Working Washington, which is a union front group, they don't like to mention the fact that they're backed by SEIU money. They, in fact, like to keep that as hidden as humanly possible. They don't openly tell you that, even when there are clear conflicts of interest. They, alongside Shama Sawant, tried to get Attorney General Bob Ferguson to prosecute Amazon and Jeff Bezos for, quote unquote, intimidating a public servant. Why? Because they said they're pausing a construction project that would lead to thousands of jobs. They're pausing that project pending the results of the Amazon head tax, which will be voted into law today. It'll be vetoed, but it'll be voted on today. They said, hey, you're about to hit us with $20 million in added taxes. We just paid $250 million in local statewide taxes in 2017. We have to consider other options because this will make our business model even more expensive. It was a ploy. It was a stunt by Amazon. I don't know if they're going to follow through with it, but they did that. And then all of a sudden, Shama Sawant is claiming this is intimidating. This is intimidation of a public servant. Working Washington and their union friends push this out there. And almost immediately, every single person who heard about this said, oh, yeah, that's ridiculous. Former Attorney General Rob McKenna was on the show last week. He called it ludicrous. He said it was irresponsible. You had the Seattle Times over the weekend, their editorial board slamming this thing. And of course, I slammed it because it's absolutely ridiculous. It sends the message that, hey, if you disagree with a politician and a politician's stance, we're going to prosecute you if you dare utter your disagreement in public. So it would have had a chilling effect. Now, for me, I stopped short of saying it has a chilling effect because no one takes anything Working Washington or Shama Sawant takes seriously when it happens to do with legal matters. Like, they don't know what it is they're talking about. And multiple times, I asked Sage Wilson. He is the guy who's the spokesperson for Working Washington. I think he's, like, their only employee. I don't know how staffed they are. I think they're mostly by volunteers. But he gets paid to do this because he was calling me out. I was like, come put on a lawyer. I will give you any lawyer you want who supports it. I will give them airtime. Bring them on. Let's have that debate. And they refused. In fact, they ignored me every single time I made that claim, and then they moved on to something else. Well, now we have Attorney General Bob Ferguson, the one that they implored to prosecute Amazon, agreeing with me, agreeing with Rob McKenna, agreeing with the Seattle Times legal assessment of this ridiculous stunt. In a letter written to Working Washington, after an initial assessment, we find there's no legal basis for invoking the intimidating a public servant provision of the Washington Criminal Code, based on the facts set forth in the letter. Nor would the facts meet the burden of proof and test of culpability necessary to support a criminal prosecution. I hope this message is helpful to you and your counsel. Meaning, you guys are insane. Your legal interpretation is the most incorrect we've ever seen. You're embarrassing yourself. Please go back and crawl under that rock from which you came. Now, weirdly, I love this. This is my favorite response because it's just trolling and it's embarrassing. I feel embarrassed for Working Washington spokesperson Sage Wilson because he sent a text statement to the Seattle Times once they reported on the story. This was the response. It is extraordinary that Amazon's subprime mob boss behavior was so brutal, it ignited a citywide debate over whether it was actually, in fact, a criminal. Sage Wilson, you pathetic little creature. No one debated this. Literally, no one debated this. Everyone said categorically that this move was a stunt by a union front group. They called it embarrassing. They called it dangerous. There was no debate. There was consensus. Everyone agreed that you're insane. Everyone agreed that your position was legally untenable. A citywide debate? You dummy. A citywide debate. And so during my interview with Shama Sawant, I asked her about this. And I brought up the fact that, isn't it rather disturbing and dangerous that a sitting politician would try to prosecute political enemies? And she did her best to talk around it.
So given how stark the difference is between how much Amazon has and its unwillingness to pay and its shamefulness in holding construction jobs hostage and using that as a club against the movement for housing justice, that is absolutely shameful. Now, whether that is legally prosecutable or not, that is not a question I'm preoccupied with.
But okay, just real quick. I'm not preoccupied with the legal question. You call for the prosecution of Amazon, but you're not preoccupied with the legal question? How does that work exactly? You just call for things and hope something will happen, but you're not preoccupied? You were preoccupied enough to make the initial call.
Whether that is legally prosecutable or not, that is not a question I'm preoccupied with.
But isn't it shameful to use the potential from your office as a government leader to silence people by threatening that, hey, if you come out and do something that's in opposition to our cause, we're going to prosecute, when a law wasn't broken?
I wouldn't think of Amazon as a person. This is a behemoth corporation that is that made $5.6 billion of profits, not revenues, last year. And only in the first quarter of this year, they made $1.6 billion of profits, which mathematically is equal to 80 times the 80 years of the tax that they would pay if the $75 million went through. So I do not accept that Amazon is an ordinary person who has been threatened or silenced. I mean, I think you're flipping reality on its head by saying that. There is no potential. Amazon's corporation is owned by billionaires. We're not talking about tech workers or the warehouse workers or prime drivers or the Amazon pilots. We are not talking about the workers who work at Amazon. And as a matter of fact, it's the workers who create the profits for Jeff Bezos and the other billionaires. When we say Amazon, we're talking about Jeff Bezos and the billionaires. And I think it would be an extreme flipping of reality on its head to say, well, Jeff Bezos is an ordinary person. No, he's not. He's the richest man in the world.
Okay. So we're going to play the full interview. It was like 8 minutes long on the After Show podcast if you want to get the unedited version. But just notice what she said there at the end. And I thought that that was pretty telling. Listen to this just one more time in just a few seconds.
Jeff Bezos and the billionaires. And I think it would be an extreme flipping of reality on its head to say, well, Jeff Bezos is an ordinary person. No, he's not. He's the richest man in the world.
So what she's basically saying is because he's successful at what he does, he's no longer considered equal under the law. That's what she's saying there. That's exactly what she's saying there. He's not a regular person. Because remember, we're talking about, legally speaking, we're talking about whether or not it is problematic that a sitting Seattle council member threatens a opponent with prosecution. And by the way, remember, at this event, they're screaming about fascism nonstop. In fact, later on in the show, we'll play you the audio of an activist who told me that Trump and Pence were fascistic but couldn't define fascism. They're there talking about fascism and the concern, which, of course, goes after political opponents, right? Silences political opponents through authority, through authoritarianism. You've got them saying that, but in the other breath, they're saying, we're going to prosecute people who take positions that are in conflict of the political views that we hold. And we can do that because Jeff Bezos, he's not your normal person. He's wealthy. He's a billionaire. You do understand that the law applies to billionaires. Like, they're equally protected, yeah? I mean, they may have a foot up in being able to afford the best counsel, right? They can afford publicists to help create a narrative around a potential lawsuit or prosecution, right? Okay, I'll give you that. But you do understand that the law treats them equally. That because they happen to be wealthy doesn't mean that you can just go run roughshod over them and not care about the legal question as to whether or not it's prosecutable as you call for the prosecution. What is going on? I was at this rally on Saturday, and as I was talking to people, and you know, they were nice people. They were angry, obviously, but they were nice people. They weren't mean-spirited as I was asking questions and I was probing, and I give them kudos to that, I suppose, although I grow, I don't know, anxious about thanking people for being like normal human beings. I don't know if I should have to do that, but I don't know whether to laugh at the insanity or cry at the insanity, because these people are voters. These people are disproportionately represented in the council. Their voice is disproportionately represented in the council. And they're crazy. These positions are crazy. Not just dangerous, not just me disagreeing with the position. They're ludicrous. They're wrong. These aren't opinions. This is not an opinion that Jeff Bezos, because he's rich, should be treated a little bit differently under the law. No. He's not. That is fact. He's treated equally. So I don't know whether I should just laugh at these people because of how crazy they are, or just go home after the show and just cry, like sloppy cry in the shower, the kind where like you have to take a breath because you're crying so hard you can barely breathe, and just say to myself, oh my God, they are in charge in the city of Seattle, the city I live. Oh, I need to move. Bellevue's looking a lot nicer. Everett, Lynn, where should I move? We should have a poll up. What city will have me? I should ask it that way.
Well, there's that Bothell's considering naming a park after you, so that might be
Well, I mean, I had to start that movement myself. It hasn't gotten any traction. Mostly because up until you just said that, I totally forgot to follow through on that. So yes, let's us all remind me on a regular basis of the promises I make. 1-800-465-8770. Text me the city that I should move to, and if I get enough votes of one particular city and there's consensus, I will just move there at the end of my lease. 1-800-465-8770. That's how you text me. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Hello. Good morning. We're live in the Online Training Academy studio. Thank you for the invites to live in Lakewood, Bellevue, Milton, the gem of Pierce County. Really do appreciate it. I'm kind of looking at Bellevue because it's close to the office, kind of. Let's talk about something that happened at Duke. Just last week, it had a significant development over the weekend. There was a barista at a coffee shop on the Duke campus. It's called Joe Van Gogh Coffee. She was fired along with her coworker because a high-powered administrator was upset about a song she was playing off of the Spotify account in the coffee shop. The barista in question, her name is Brittany Brown. The vice president of student affairs, the one who was offended by the lyrics, is Larry Mineta. So the way it goes is he walks in for a muffin. Did you notice this? They kept making a big deal about specifically saying vegan muffin. They said vegan muffin maybe 14 times in the article and in the interview with this girl, because I think they're kind of shaming him for having a vegan muffin, which shame away, because vegan muffins are for losers. He hears a song from Young Dolph. Do you know who that is?
This story is the first time I'd heard of it. Yeah.
So the song has got... It's called Get Paid, and it's got a whole bunch of vulgarities in it.
Get paid, young. Get paid, young. Get paid.
And so it's playing in the background. Larry feels a little uncomfortable. He says, hey, lady, turn this off. You can't have it. And she did. She apologized. She offered him the vegan muffin for free to make up for it. But he curtly said to ring it up. He said, quote, you need to ring me up for it right now. So he was pissed. She ends up getting fired. Here she is talking with the News and Observer.
It was actually a playlist. Like, you know how you go on, like, Spotify, and, like, you pick a playlist, and you keep it moving?
Yeah.
Like, that's honestly what it was. It was not, like, a playlist. I was like, let's see what kind of crazy songs I can put on here. Like, this was, like, an honest mistake that just happened to pop up on a playlist.
Okay, so I'm going to... She's got a whole big interview. I don't think it was an honest mistake. I think they knew that this played. I think it plays all the time. And they didn't care because that's the branding of this particular coffee shop. And I have no problem with that branding, but I also understand where the administrator is coming from, because it is on college campus, which means it is subject to different rules that the campus has in place. And so you can't necessarily, if you're worried about your own branding and this is part of your brand, don't be on a college campus. This is not exclusive to Duke. This is a problem or an issue at all college campuses. If you choose to do business with them, you have to abide by their brand, not your own brand. And you decide to get rid of your own brand, or at least part of your own brand, once you get into this kind of situation. Now, the guy complains, Larry, this VP, And they end up firing Brittany and her coworker who was there as well. So she was fired. They were fired by the coffee shop. But then over the weekend, the owner comes out and says, actually, we're rehiring them and we're just going to close down our business on the Duke campus. We're going to have them, we're offering them a job either in our production department or at any of our other stores, and we're just going to leave Duke campus. That's the right move. And he says that he wanted to do it because he's concerned over the company's, quote, brand independence without conditions. Okay. Well, you knew going in that there were going to be conditions placed on your brand, and as a result, this is the consequence, and now you leave. It sounds like this was all resolved. This is a resolved story. Now, we're not treating it as a resolved story. Over at The Atlantic, Connor Friedsdorf, who I normally like, he turned this into a bizarre issue. He wrote, if that's where the matter ended, this would be the sort of story that happens all the time in the U.S., but is seldom discussed. A patron feels righteously entitled in interaction with low-wage service worker, lashing out in a manner that is needlessly harsh and glaringly uncharitable, while the low-wage service worker is unfailingly polite and doing her level best to be accommodating. Oh, shut up. That's not what this is about. He's an administrator. He represents the school. The school looks bad with this kind of rap music playing in the background. It sends the wrong message to their own personal brand that you decided willingly to associate yourself with and follow their rules. Big deal. You represent the school in a case like this. And if you're unwilling to do that, if it conflicts with your own brand, then leave. That's what they're doing. This is the right move. Now, it's funny because you always take a risk when this is your brand. And I've made this point before. Valiant Barbershop in Queen Anne, the best place to get a haircut. I highly, highly, highly recommend them. Specifically, go with Tyler Poole. He's my barber there. He's awesome. Free plug. But I walk in. I'm not easily offended. They've got rap music blaring with lots of vulgarities. That's just happens to be their personal brand. And you either like that brand or you don't. This is a place, presumably, this coffee shop is appealing not to the vice president of, you know, deans there, right? They're there because they want to accommodate an 18 to 24-year-old millennial crowd that likes rap music, doesn't bat an eye when they hear vulgarity. It may not be your cup of tea. That's fine. But it's for them. So, you know, you take that risk. If that's what you want to be branded as, that's what you want to be branded as. Can we all just say this is, it ended fine? Everyone should be happy? No? Everyone's happy. Everyone, there's no victim here. There's no victim.
No, they don't get to work on campus anymore.
Did they want to?
Maybe.
How do you know? Why do you make that assumption?
I presume they're college students.
Why do you assume that? She's 47 years old. I don't know how old she is. It just seems like this is the right resolution. They didn't belong there, according to their own brand. And now they've moved. If you want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rancho.